Welcome to a new episode of Liftoff, a Jets football podcast with your host, Chris, and from playlikeajet.com, Mr. Sharman Phillip. And remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Liftoff Jets. You can follow Sharman at GrownFolk1980. You can follow myself at CP7NY. And you could also find our podcast wherever you find your podcast at Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon, and iHeartRadio. And you could also find us on SportsWire Radio at sportsanarium.com/player. And you can follow the station manager there, Thomas Bryce, at Thomas Bryce 2017, for all the scheduling of all the other great shows. So, Sharman, week away from camp finally opening up.
Oh, I can't wait, man. There's so many reasons why, you know, I want camp to start. All the position battles, and just to see which player this year would, you know, kind of rise to the top, you know, bring his game with him. Mm-hmm. That has me really interested, because I think there are players on this roster that, if they would take a step or two forward, would probably change the dynamics of this team drastically. So I think one player in is Jermaine Johnson, in my opinion, because he has the talent and the makeup to become an elite pass rusher in the NFL. And if you're talking about this guy taking his game to a next level and getting more snaps, this changes a lot, man. So, I mean, that's just one player, in my opinion, that could change things. So I'm very excited to see who's next up, man. And he's young enough, and second year in the NFL, it's time to make some noise, man.
And you know what? It was funny, because the Draft Network today, earlier today, posts, I'm going to read it off to you. It says, Jermaine Johnson is facing a make or break season for the Jets in 2023. He goes, He goes, you can never have enough pass rushers, but what exactly will Johnson's role look like following the addition of Will McDonald? Now, okay, so let's try to put this in perspective here. Think about it. After this year, Lawson and Bryce Huff are both free agents. So yeah. I'm assuming the Draft Network thinks that we're signing both of those guys, right? And that's going to go fine and everything's going to be great. No, you can't assume that. They're both going to be free agents. They might get huge deals from another team, and or the Jets might say, no, we don't want to sign you, right? Whatever. I don't know what the deal is. You don't know. They're free agents. That's why you draft these guys. You may not have enough edge rushers after this season. So it's not a make or break year for Jermaine Johnson. I know you're going to explain it another way too, but this makes no sense.
Yeah, but number one, this is the thing. To me, sometimes some of these writers write to people, in my opinion, that have absolutely no clue what's happening on us on said team. That's why they do this, because Jermaine Johnson, no matter how good he becomes, it will only be a part of the parcel because of the way that Robert Saleh and I always forget his name, the defensive coordinators, Brick. And how Brick and Saleh, what they do. Their whole thing is, you know, specifically, everybody gets a certain amount of snaps. And the snap numbers never climb too high. Actually, Quinnen Williams' snap numbers was like really high, higher than normal for a three tech that plays in this scheme, because they normally don't let guys play. They want everybody fresh, and they want everybody fresh to rush. That's number one. Number two, when you look at the numbers, I know everybody loves Bryce Huff, and I love me some Bryce Huff. I could make a case that a better Jermaine Johnson fits way better and this scheme than Bryce Hall. And guess what? Jermaine Johnson would be the staple. And Will McDonald becomes Bryce Huff. And Will McDonald is a bigger, taller Bryce Huff.
All right.
You understand what I'm saying? So, so what is the argument here? What are we talking about? You know, I think I made my point clear before when I said that I think if he brings his game, he's gonna change the dynamics on the front. And it's true, on the defensive front, he could. Because of the kind of player he could be, because of what he showed in college. A guy his size, with his speed, with his strength, if he starts lighting it up, we're talking about Lawson, that's coming off of a second year after his surgery, which normally everybody says that that first year after you have that surgery, you're not really yourself. So you're talking about him coming in, right? At peak Lawson.
Right.
And then you have Jermaine Johnson, let's say, hypothetically, that just stepped his game up a couple notches. You have, holy crap, man, you have you're gonna have so many weapons on that front. It's gonna be ridiculous. You know what I mean? You have JFM, you have Clemens, and what are you kidding?
Yeah,
it's not no break and make or break, man. No, it's not. It's,
after 1 year,
exactly. It's. I think if you want to say it, the way I said it was the best way to say it. If he steps his game up now, he changes things drastically for that front. And that's crazy to say, because in my opinion, this is one of the best on paper fronts in the NFL.
Yep. Easily.
So, exactly. You know how much people forget. People forget how good these guys are. And I haven't even mentioned the additions this offseason. Because I'm sorry, but I know he's not the best. He's not a good pass rusher. But when it comes to stopping the run, there's not too many guys better than Al Woods. Yep. Go watch the tape and come back and talk to me. And you think that there's a perfect pass rushing three technique to back up Quinton Williams? It's Quinton Jefferson. And the Jets just happened to get him in free agency. So what do we, so I'm saying all this to say that there is nothing about this that's a make or break for Jermaine Johnson. I think if he is good, I think he could stay, because he was picked high anyway. They will always refer to their high picks. No, teams always do that, right? Because they love the guy. They you know that there's more about it's more about the person than it's just about the player. But the guy is good enough. He showed in flashes that, especially against the run, he's unstoppable. There was a play where I think it was an outside toss play where he saw that coming a mile away, blew the crap out of the guard, and went to take the running back down in the backfield. This is a rookie we're talking about. Being able to diagnose a run play outside. I bet you money that offensive coordinator thought they would be able to get him on that play. You understand what I'm saying? So yeah. if you give him another year under the system, with added pieces that around him to give him better opportunities. And if his game is up where it's supposed to be, it's best for the Jets and Jermaine Johnson. And so there's no make or break in my opinion. I think Jermaine Johnson is awesome. I just think that he could change the dynamics of this incredible, that incredible, already incredible line to stratosphere type of performance, in my opinion.
Right.
So,
yeah. Nobody's in a make or break year in year two I'm sorry. If he's in the same situation, I don't want to bring him in to compare or anything like that. But if he's in the same situation as Becton is right now, you could say that is a make or break season, right? For Becton, because he has to still prove that he could play a full season. Forget about playing if he ends up at right tackle this year, right? Then he has to prove he can play right tackle. But he just has to get through the season without being hurt. If he gets through the season without getting hurt, you know he's going to be good wherever they put him, whether it's left or right. I have no doubt that guy is going to be really good at whatever he does. He just has to stay healthy. And I think this is a make or break year for him, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you.
If someone has a make or break, it's him. It's not Jermaine Johnson in year two, you know, and he came off all right. He wasn't great last year, but he wasn't awful where you're like, oh, he looked really bad. He's got a really
who Johnson.
Right. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, he wasn't awful,
but he didn't have enough snaps to even qualify as you would right, have I think he be was able to watch tape and say, oh, yeah, that's not enough snaps to judge a player. In my opinion, it's just not.
I don't even think
he had 30% snaps. I think he had below 20%. If I remember,
he posted
I think I saw the numbers somewhere. Yeah,
he reposted the Draft Network.
He's the one that did it.
No.
He's been.
He retweeted it just to show. And he said, you know, LML, you know, laugh my butt off, make or break. He goes, bro, please do your homework. I played about 23% of the snaps due to depth with very limited third down ops. And what I did with those snaps was impressive, to say the least. It's no question, with more snaps, I'm going to be more productive. I'll earn it like always. Take care. So.
Yeah, he's been paying attention. He's been paying attention lately. Like, I've seen him. I've been seeing him because at first he never used to be on the internet. I didn't see this dude anywhere. And then all of a sudden he started popping up. He has a YouTube channel, I think. I never hooked it up. So I never joined it or nothing. So I don't know about that. But also I saw him coming around and, you know, on the internet and talking about what he's about to do and stuff like that. And I responded a couple of times. Because, again, like I said, I think that kind of player would change things drastically. Because to tell you the truth, I feel the same way about Michael Clemens. Because I think I said this before. Michael Clemens, especially the thought of him putting on weight, which he did, because he came in at 270. There's rumors saying that this dude is 290. If you're talking about the kind of athleticism that he had, right, and you're talking about him being 10 pounds almost 20 pounds heavier, still being able to play, to display the kind of athleticism he had and that freakish amount of strength that he has, bro, that's a better version of GFM, which another guy that people don't even talk about. Scary good. That weighs about the same size. GFM is 6'4". Clemens is 6'5". GFM is 288. Clemens is 270. If Clemens becomes 288 or 290, that's two GFMs you got.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem. That's a massive problem. If the Jets could get you into third and long, bro, just put your stuff down and go home. If you're in third and long for an abnormally high rate against the Jets, go home, because your quarterback's gonna hurt. That's just what it's gonna be. There's not enough interior offensive linemen that are athletic enough and strong enough to basically take on these guys in waves. You're talking about, like I said, Quentin Jefferson is a backup. And he's a freaking backup. You're talking about you getting wave after wave of JFM and Clemens. And then you have freaking Bryce up on the edge. Then you have Come on, bro. Lawson at 100%. Come on. Go home. Just if that's how you'll get, if you're a 3rd and 11, I oh, gotta man. I'm pray for
it's
you.
Over.
Yeah. I pray for you.
Yeah.
Because we know for sure, and again, talking about our defense, we're talking about this, how bad our safeties were last year. If our safeties are even average, if we had bad safeties and we were top 10 in the league in defense, what are we with average safeties?
Exactly.
Yeah, no. Anyway.
Exactly. So anyway, another minor skirmish came on Twitter the last day or two. It was about, I don't know why, but Asante Samuel was going after Sauce, then Revis stepped in, and then he was going after Revis. So, like, I'm sure everybody's seen it. I don't want to go through all those tweets, but Samuel is trying to stay relevant out there in Twitter land or in football land. Well, what are your thoughts?
I think the thing that got me going about that whole thing, I don't know how many tweets that he tweeted, but the one thing I saw him tweet was that the New York media will take your career to another level when he saw that that account, Dove Kleeman account, basically put Sauce Gardner as the second best corner in the NFL behind Pat Surtain Jr., the Broncos corner.
Right.
This is crazy. I mean, I love Patrick Surtain. Like, I really love him as a player. You understand me? The thing, in my opinion, that these two players is they're in extraordinarily good at man coverage. Right?
Yeah.
But they're young, so the zone part of their game is not up to par with how good they play as man cover corners. But don't get what I said twisted now, because they do not stink at zone. They're just not as good. That's how good their man coverage is. And to me, they're not that far off. And I'll be incredibly honest here, right? And people might kill me for this. Staying at the top as a corner in the NFL, probably the hardest position to do that in the game, hands down. I don't care what anybody tell me. You could go back as far as you want. There's only been a handful of corners in the NFL that has ruled the boundaries of the NFL football field for more than 2 years straight. Name the player, I will tell you, that they probably had a nice year or two nice years, and that was it. Most of them are Hall of Fame players. You understand what I'm saying?
Yep.
This is not, this, there is nothing more difficult than being out on an island against offenses that dictate to you what they're going to do. And your technique is all you got, your technique and your arrogance, because trust me, if you're going to be a corner in the NFL, you got to have a set of brass ones, you know.
Oh yeah.
So over the years, we've seen some of the best corners, and tell me, I could only count them on one hand. That one season that Revis had, who else did that? It was the New York media that made that happened?
No.
Is he out of his mind? Like, this guy, I'm not gonna be like most people on the internet and take shots at Asante Samuel, because Asante Samuel had one of these careers, in my opinion, that you have to acknowledge, because he was a special teamer and he was a formidable defensive back. This dude had what he had like about 50 interceptions. It's like nobody's talking about this guy like he was a bum. You understand me?
Yeah, but you can't. He had 51 picks.
You can't. No, exactly. He, bro, listen to me. one of the things that stood out about him was how incredibly aggressive he was. That was what made him, and that's what broke him. If you remember his career, this dude would bait the crap out of every quarterback and pick them off. His freaking Twitter handle is Pick Six. You know why? Because he made a career out of doing that. Bro, nobody's hating on that. Everybody knows how good you were. But also, people remembered when you started losing a step, when everybody started double moving your ass and burning the crap out of you.
Yep.
And as a corner, when you're so aggressive and you're not willing to change your game, or your game is so one-dimensional, you will look bad. And a lot of people only remember the bad of his career because they remember him getting burnt so many times from that with those double moves, and don't remember the 51 interceptions, because that's how the world works, unfortunately. Right. But anybody that knows the game will never shit, excuse my language, will never poop all over Asante Samuel's career, because they know he was very good.
Exactly.
So how in the hell are you here sitting on the internet trying to burn down a kid that just had a career year in his rookie year? Something that never happens. As a senior cornerback, somebody that had played in the NFL, you're supposed to reach out to this kid and help mold him. Help him not make the mistakes that you made. Instead, you're here hunting for fame on the internet because you want some kind of, apparently, want some kind of celebrity boxing match with Darrell Rivers. That's what it's about. You're on here arguing with a kid. You're a grown man arguing with a kid, telling him that the New York media made his career. Everybody, every corner, every film watcher, everybody of any substance that knows football has acknowledged that not only does he have incredible athletic, you have kind of run out of adjectives to describe what he does athletically, because it makes absolutely no sense with his size, how he turns and moves on the field. And with that, his preparation is crisp enough that he understands where to be. There was one play, first play of his career, I think. Was it the first play of his career? Or one of the first plays of his career against the Ravens? Everybody watches that play and thinks the tight end was what's his name? The phenomenal tight end from the Ravens. I forget his name.
Andrews.
But anyway, Andrews. Everybody, because he ended up on Andrews, everybody thinks that he was supposed to be on Andrews. I'm sorry. If you know any film and you watch that tape, that's not his guy.
But you know what?
He noticed something went wrong, and he inserted himself in the play because he knew that's where the ball was going to go. That is next level preparation and understanding of defense and offense. And that's a rookie doing that. And right, by the way, the person that did not cover his guy was a freaking veteran safety.
But come here's on, the thing. Man. They're bringing up one play in a whole season. That if you keep on bringing up one play, even if he was wrong in that one play, that's one play. In 17 games, you're talking about one play. So, okay, if that was a mistake, I'm not saying it is. But if it was a mistake on Sauce's part, that's one mistake for a rookie. And that was what, his first or second game? Second game, I think, of the season, or third game. So I don't know what that proves either way. Like, what are you trying to prove by these guys are bringing up that as a mistake, but meanwhile it's not. But even if it was, that's one mistake. There's a reason why this kid, it was defensive rookie of the year. I mean, there's a reason for that. I mean, I don't know. Is the guy just trying to stay relevant in the you know, in this whole social media side, maybe he's not getting any coaching jobs, so he's a little upset. I don't know. I don't get it. I don't know.
The one thing with Asante Samuel, which I listen, it's one of those things. In my opinion, I think he's a very nice guy. I don't know how much people know about him, but this dude and this dude's friend, his last name was Henry. He was a wide receiver on the Bengals. That was his very close friend, like brothers almost. And he died in a car accident. I want to say that's what happened to the kid. I could be wrong. But he died somehow. And he had two boys. And this man and his wife adopted the guy's kids like it was his own. You understand me? Yeah. And raised them like it was like they're his own. And I remember him talking about, somebody asked him in an interview about him, and he was in tears talking about how proud he was of them. And that his boy, wherever he is proud watching his sons grow. Listen, I don't care what you do in this world. If you're able to give your heart that way, man, you're not. I gotta give it to you, bro. I definitely gotta give it to you. So I'm not gonna be here besmirching the name of Asante Samuel as a human being. I'm sorry. Once you win a lot of points for me when you could do something like that. Because that's not an easy thing to do. Money is not the reason why. That for you to pay attention and raise, because he has his own kids. He has two boys himself. His wife took two boys into their house when they already had two boys. So, great human being. But you're not telling me that this argument that he's on the internet is real, because I know that he knows enough football to know that, number one, Darrell Revis was the real deal, right? Mm-hmm. He knows that for sure. That's number one. And number two, he knows for sure that it was a valid thing that Sauce Gardner did his rookie season. It was valid. You want to argue if Tariq Woolen's season was better than his? Go ahead.
Right.
I'm not going to argue with you, because this is all subjective. Fine. You know how many years, if you've been watching sports long enough, you know how many years you're going into the end of the season and some guy wins the MVP and you're like, what? They didn't give it to LeBron? And what? You know, and we have the discussion, but what are we relieving this for? That doesn't mean the kid sucks. He was good enough that he was, after Woolen had all these interceptions, he was still on the minds of every NFL player and pundit. Why? Not only because he was in New York, but when you watch him play, it was special. The numbers say it too. So, you know, again, like I said, I think this is all a ruse. I think this is a ruse. I think Chris said it offline. He said it must be because he wants to promote this boxing match with Revis and whatever. And people are falling for this.
Yeah.
I'm not.
And you know what? There's other ways around doing this. I mean, come on. Does Samuel really? I mean, he's had, like you said, guy had a very good career. I don't want to say great career, but the guy lasted 11 seasons in the league. The guy had, he was a two-time Super Bowl champ, four-time Pro Bowler, one-time All-Pro. I mean, this guy did everything in the league. And he's stooping himself down to this? I mean,
exactly.
Come on.
And the craziest thing, Chris, the last thing I will say, right? One of the reasons why people never really bring his name up is because people always viewed him as that thug guy.
Yeah.
With the gold teeth and the chains and the dreads. And you know the stigma that comes with this stuff. Yeah. You know what I mean? And again, like I said,
you're just adding to it. You're adding to the fire, right?
in my opinion, there's nothing wrong with what he did. If that's who he is and you're being yourself, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Because in reality, in reality, what we as citizens ask other citizens to do is be the best of themselves, right?
Yep.
This man had his issues. He had, I think he had issues in clubs, he had issues with alcohol, whatever the hell else he had, right? With weed, he had all. When it comes at the end of the day, when you look back on his career, right, you could probably say that his hard-headed behavior as a kid in the NFL took away from what he could have been. Maybe he's salty about that. Maybe he feels like they robbed him because they just didn't like the way he looked. That's possible.
Right.
But you cannot blame nobody for this.
No.
You could only blame yourself.
Yeah.
Because in reality, yes, it's unfair that nobody likes the fact that you have tattoos and dreads and gold teeth. The problem with that is your behavior added to it. Because I remember there was players in the NFL that had tattoos, dreads, and gold teeth, and nobody said nothing about them. Example number one. Mm-hmm. Remember the Colts had a running back that never used to talk that much? All he used to do was he used to talk really, really quiet.
Yep.
Had a lot of dreads, never took his gold teeth out. To this day, people will always acknowledge he was an incredible running back. Yep. But the one thing you will never say is that man was ever in trouble. Nope.
Right.
Never. That's one thing you will never say about him. Because he is, no matter how you saw him to be, number one, I remember years after he retired, he was on an episode of something about money, talking about how he had saved millions and millions of dollars. He never really used to spend it. Right? You would think, because the way he dresses and stuff shouts, oh, irresponsible party goer. Nope. Never got in trouble. Never was no club crap. Businessman. All he did was wear his dreads and wear his gold teeth.
Yep.
Right? But Samuel didn't do any of it. He did that, but he also added the attitude and the trouble with it. So you mar your own time in the NFL with that behavior, and I'm sorry. There's people that's gonna hold that against you. There's nothing you could do about it. But don't take shots at a kid coming up.
Right. And think about it too. And think about it. He's got a kid in the NFL now.
Thank you.
Why are you doing this?
Would you
be happy
if somebody did that to your damn kid?
I don't know. You know what? I don't get it. And
I don't get it either, bro.
Yeah. Anyway, but we found out today the Jets are on Hard Knocks. And that also made everybody flip out a little bit. And so I don't get it. I personally love that they're going to be on Hard Knocks because they were great on it the last time in 2010. They went to the AFC Championship game. So obviously Hard Knocks had nothing to do with them winning or losing. I love it. I think as Jet fans, we just got to sit back and enjoy the extra coverage that our team is going to be getting this summer, because that one Jet Drive is doing their thing and Hard Knocks. So we're getting Monday and Tuesdays are going to be huge Jet stuff back to back.
That's the thing are they still going to be able to do one Jets Drive?
They're promoting it. One Jets Drive.
Really?
Yeah. Every Monday.
Every Monday.
Every Monday. They said it every Monday.
And then Hard Knocks is going to be every what?
Tuesday. I think they do Tuesday. Wow. So think about it. Monday and Tuesday.
It's all Jets.
We got 2 hours, an hour on each day of great Jets coverage that we wouldn't have had, right? We wouldn't have had. So I love this, but some people are saying it's a bad idea. I don't think it's a bad idea at all. So, but the one reason you brought it up, I think it was last week on the show when we were talking about it, you brought up the reason why you don't think the Jets want to do it and probably why most of the other teams don't want to do it, right? Because you said they just don't want to open up the door and let everybody see everything that they're doing, right? It could be the smallest minute thing that they're doing in the office or in the locker room or in the meeting room, anything. They probably want to keep it so, so close to the vest, like it's been under Joe Douglas, right? It's been this kind of secretive, you know, nothing is leaking out, nothing at all. So even showing the little bit of it is not good. And we're, they're already showing a little bit of it with the One Jets Drive. So now they're going to show a little bit more because obviously Hard Knocks has to do something different than One Jets Drive or else it would be the same show two nights in a row. So, but I think you hit it. I think you hit it on the head last week. You said it perfectly. And I think that's why no team wants to do it because whatever they're showing is something that they don't want us to see. Right. So I think that's the reason, but there might be other reasons, but I think that is the reason. So I think you hit it on the head.
Yeah. yeah. A lot. I thought that the Jets probably were negotiating something with the production team, the HBO production team, because of their own cameras being around and what are they, what, you know, how much of what HBO wants and how much of what their own production team would want. So negotiating how that those two would play together is probably one of the reasons why it took so long to come through. But there's ways to hide this stuff. You know, they don't have to show everything that's going on. So there's ways they're going to they have to show, you know, what's going on. Because let's be real, man, a lot of, and I think that one of the reasons why the NFL would have had no choice but to pick the Jets was because the storylines around the Jets is just massive, man. And I think a lot of the story of One Hard Knocks will be around this, will probably around the storylines more than it would be about the X and O's. So a lot of what the team itself would be doing, in my opinion, will kind of be in the back, in the shadows, you know, because people will be paying attention more, or the cameras will be pointed more on the huge storylines. And we're talking about Quinnen Williams is not signed. Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback. Zach Wilson as the second, as the backup to Rodgers. You know, we know that the media, that the camera kind of loves our coach. You know what I mean? Yeah. And the way he goes about doing his thing. And this is New Jersey, New York area, man. Let's be real. You know, the storyline around here is always bigger than anything else. So I think the Jets will be able to put a lot of the more important things in the background so that they wouldn't have to reveal a lot anyway. So
yeah, no, I agree. So I'm looking forward to it. I don't get some of these people being against it, you know, some fans or Colin Coward was like, oh, it's the last 14 teams that have been on it have only won one playoff game. They haven't gone to the next round. And how can a TV show or whatever Hard Knocks you want to consider what it is, how is that going to affect the Jets in the regular season or in the playoffs, hopefully? Like, it has no effect on them. Zero. So whether the Jets win, lose, tie, or anything during the regular season or get to the playoffs or don't get to the playoffs, it's going to have nothing to do with Hard Knocks. So just sit back, enjoy the summer of all this extra coverage we're getting with the Jets. We're getting Monday
night. And people hating.
Right. And everybody hating us. We get that every day. We get a different tweet from some reporter saying something. Another guy, Sharp, I think today said something. Not Shannon Sharp. Warren Sharp.
I know who you're talking about. He's been on that whole thing all offseason.
I don't even want to talk about him.
Stupid articles about Rodgers. I want to say he's the one that wrote the article that had me fuming about how the Jets should have taken former first round Vikings pick. What's his name? That used to be a Jet for a second. Forget his name, man. Black kid. Quarterback, former first round Vikings pick, got injured. He was with the Jets for a few years, with the Broncos last year. Got injured last year. But anyway, he won. He's He's talking about this kid that just should have went after him instead of Aaron Rodgers. I don't care who he is.
Bridgewater.
Bridgewater. Thank you. You know, I think he's the one that wrote that article that had me fuming, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's been trying to be, you know. I don't pay attention.
Yeah, if you don't understand the situation with the quarterback and all that, then don't even bother writing. You like just do a little bit more research, you know, like like earlier, like we were talking about the other one about Jermaine Johnson. Do a little bit of research. Look that he only had 24% of the snaps, and look that two of our top edge guys are going to be free agents after this season. So an extra and so drafting an edge this year is not, and drafting one last year and this year does make sense. When you think about we possibly could lose two edge guys after this season. So just do a little bit of extra research. That's all I'm asking these guys. I know if I'm writing an article on, you know, and I'm putting it out there on Twitter and everywhere else, I would do as much research as possible on it. But that's me. I don't know. I know that's crazy, but I guess that's asking for a lot. But anyway, next week camp opens up. So next week we're going to hit our questions entering camp for the both of us, any questions we have, and hopefully we could get through it. But let's finish off our preview for the season entering camp with our last position group. And that's going to be the cornerbacks, which is perfect because we kind of talked about Sauce a little bit earlier. But this has to be, I mean, if it's not the line, the defensive line, it's got to be the cornerback room. That's our best group that we have on the team right now.
Sure.
What do you think?
The scheme fits them to a T. I know everybody talks about Sauce Gardner, but the kind of year that DJ Reed had on the other side is also incredible. Losing his father in the beginning of the season. And playing through that, basically kind of an elite season, which I, in my opinion, got not enough attention, how well he played. And then you go inside and you find Michael Carter, too. he's so good, but at the same time, I think that's the mark of a good nickel corner, is the fact that you just don't hear his name. You don't hear too much about him. Because most of the time when a nickel corner, you hear them talking, it's either he missed some kind of tackle or he got burned.
Right.
And the fact that you don't hear his name is that's how good he is. You watch him play. He's, for his size, at 184 pounds, he tackles so well. Almost never misses tackles, and he plays his run fits really well. Something that he struggled in his rookie season with, and teams running at him. Last year he showed the propensity to be able to attack and understand how teams try to attack him, and basically become so good, taking teams out of their game plan. Really good in coverage, really good in understanding football, and to me, with another year added on it, would be better. I think Brandon Echols is very good. Because I think there was a couple times that Carter was out and Echols stepped in and he played very well. So,
yeah.
Even a guy that we haven't mentioned that much in, because of Sauce Gardner and DJ Reed, is Bryce Hall, who we thought would be one of the better corners that we had, right? Because he has the making of it. He had 6'1", 202-pound corner, physical guy, right? Could run. But he was really never good at tracking the ball in the air, took really bad angles, and his game just never really took off, you know? Again, this is somebody that's in the shadows of Sauce Gardner and DJ Reed. in my opinion, very good backup player. So the corner, and I think we went out and got Guidry back, because I think he was somewhere out there in some other team, and Davinci Guidry is back in the fold after spending last year, I think, out somewhere else.
Right.
And I don't know, I'm never gonna say that Guidry is that good of a corner in my estimation. I think he's better as a special teamer. But I think when you look at this group of corners, I think they're pretty deep, flexible. There's a lot of different ways that the coaches could line them up. And again, I'll say it again. These guys had a hell of a season last year. When your safety suck and teams still could not pass the ball on you the way teams struggled to throw on the Jets, that shows you how well the corners play. So, yeah, this is definitely by a long stretch one of the best units on this team.
Yeah. And they added the kid from, what is it, LSU, right? Jarek Bernard Converse.
Right. And I did not watch that much film on this kid, so I'm going to hold my tongue. I heard a few people talk about him. One that I trust that said that he does have a lot of what do you call it? Like, he has a lot of potential, but they think that he's more of a safety than a corner. So I'd say that's probably what it is, if anything. That he's going to be some kind of DB, but I don't think he's going to be out there playing corner at all. Cause right. Again, like I said, this is, the corner room is fine, man. They're pretty deep.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't love the safety group as much. I don't like the linebacker group outside of CJ. But yeah, no, corners and the edge. And like you said, if we get the teams into third and long, third and 10, third and 11, third and 12, that's where we want to be. If we get to that, I think the defense is going to be lights out this year.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And this is, and the craziest thing is, when you think about it, right, for the team to get to these, to get teams to play you, to get teams in these problems where they're in third and 9 and third and 10 and third and 11, right? It's dominating the line of scrimmage and shifting it, you know, shifting it from whatever, if it's the 50, shifting it from 50 to the 49. Let them make those linemen play 1 yard behind the line of scrimmage at all times. Guess what?
Mm-hmm.
We have the bodies to do it. You understand me? We have the guys that are freakishly athletic, freakishly strong, really good at understanding their game and understand where to be when it comes to the position they're asked to. You know, we have force multipliers in Quinnen Williams, in my opinion. That's most definitely a force multiplier. And in my opinion, a guy that does not have the numbers, but when you put him snap for snap, his impact on plays, JFM does a ton for this line. So you take all these guys, and like I said, you have the force multipliers, guys that change snaps, change games because of the way they play, and then you put in the additions of Quentin Jefferson and Al Woods, and what the rookies are going to do this year, and what Carl Lawson is going to do a couple years removed from having that surgery. Scary line, man. Scary, scary stuff, because it's incredibly probable that teams are going to have to be in third and 8 and third and 7s facing the Jets on third down. So I'm itching to see this, man.
Definitely. Yeah, me too. And like you said, next week camp opens up for the Jets. And in a couple of weeks, we'll be talking about their first game, preseason game, the Hall of Fame game, August 3rd against the Browns. So this season's coming up real quick for us, so which is great. So next week, we're going to hit up any questions we got for the Jets going into camp, since camp starts next week. So if any of you guys got any, if you guys got any questions that you want us to chat about entering camp, if you got any questions about anything, just hit us up at Liftoff Jets. You could hit up Charmin at Grown Folk 1980 on Twitter. You could hit myself up at CP7NY, and we'll definitely answer your question right on the show. So that'd be cool. So anyway, that's our show. We'll be back next week, and we'll see you then.
Take it easy, guys.